Bill Williams. It's hard to go wrong when you're on the right side. Right Side Radio. Solid, conservative, and just plain right.
News Talk 770 AM, 92.5 FM WVNN. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid, conservative, and just plain right. By the way, if you find yourself getting outside of what I call the overly broad range of our AM-FM capabilities here at WVNN, just know it don't matter where you are in the whole wide world. You go to the World Wide Web, and we can square you away. Just go to our website, rightsideradio.org. Click on Listen Live, and no matter where in the world you are, and I like to always say, no matter where you is, there we is. So yeah, check it out. Go to rightsideradio.org. Click on Listen Live. You'll be listening wherever you are in the world, as long as you got internet access or streaming on your phone or whatever the case may be. That's why we have such a broad audience. I mean, it's kind of crazy. People call in from all over the state, all over the nation, really. We get calls from out of state all the time on the show. I get emails, people who listen to us in Louisiana and Virginia and wherever else. So, yeah, thank you very much for that. Listen, number two on the Triple Dipper, Baby, It's Getting Cold Outside. I hope some of y'all are singing that song now. I love that song. Which, by the way, how in the world can cancel culture cancel that song? Oh, baby, it's cold outside. And they're trying to say that, you know, it was a man pressuring a woman. No, they were playing coy with each other. It's an old school song. It's just good. Anyway, oh, baby, it's cold outside. Well, I'm saying that in reference to, I'm not going to sing that song anymore. You don't want me singing. What it's reference to, though, is the Cold War. Now, I'm of the Cold War era. That's my age. I'm telling you how old I am right now. I'm of the Cold War era. I remember the days of the great Soviet bear. You know, the threat to our international security, the mutually assured destruction of a potential nuclear war in which both sides launched so many missiles that the world would come to an end. Movies were made about it. I mean, it was, you know, it was the stuff of everyday concern. It was back in the heyday of Cold War when things happened like the Cuban Missile Crisis and you know the whole concept of the 11th Cavalry being in the Fulda Gap trying to stop the Russian hordes from coming through and I remember distinctly, by the way, as a kid, how old was I now? See, I'd have been probably ninth grade. So I've said before on the show, I went to a DOD school for American or for you know Western kids. We had some from non-American, but mostly American kids at London Central High School in London, England. My dad was in the Army. Went to school in London, England, or just outside, really, at High Wycombe Air Force Base. And that was, we still had a bunker there. It was one of those massive underground bunkers with giant steel doors, kind of like a mini NORAD. At High Wycombe Air Force Base. It was one of the command and control bunkers in the event of a massive nuclear war. And during that time, you know, I remember we went over to the continent and we had an opportunity to, you know, go through Germany and France, just a driving tour, if you will. Really, I'll be honest with you, we blitzed through Europe. My dad was intent upon us seeing all of Europe in about 7 days, which I look back on somewhat fondly and somewhat like I cannot remember anything because it went by so fast. But we stayed overnight in Paris. We spent, you know, a day in Brussels. We did some time in Heidelberg, went to Heidelberg Castle, went to Frankfurt where my brother was born. You know, we had an opportunity, too, to go to Berlin. Now, the coolest thing we did, this is back in the days of East and West Germany. The Cold War was an amazing time. Modern Germany is back to being what old Germany was. It's a full and fully constituted nation of people, one nation. It wasn't back then. It was divided. It literally had a massive wall that ran through the center that divided East Germany from West Germany. And it was not a wall to keep people out. It was a wall to keep people in. And I remember going to East Berlin, which was actually the city of Berlin was divided in half. And it was in the center. By the way, it was in the center of East Germany. So to get there, we had to ride a train. And I remember on the train seeing, you know, East German guards at the train stations and guarding certain buildings. It was obvious we were driving through a communist country. And we took the train. It was a sleeper train. We actually slept on the train traveling through East Germany to get to West Berlin, because West Berlin was an island to itself in the middle of East Germany. And when you got to West Berlin, man, it was a thriving metropolis. It was like, it was vibrant. It was full of color. I remember on the Königstrasse, there was a Burger King. I mean, I just remember that standing out in my mind for some reason, I guess because I was an American kid. And we went to Checkpoint Charlie. And you go to Checkpoint Charlie, which was the major route, the gate, if you will, between East and West Berlin. There were spy movies made about this place, man. Checkpoint Charlie. And it was one of the few checkpoints that, you know, you could actually show your passport, and if you had the right paperwork, you could get into East Germany. We were supposed to go into East Germany, but because my dad's security clearance, there was deep concern about whether we should, so we decided not to. So on the western side, here's what I remember. I remember going, literally going up onto what kind of felt like a picture, like going up onto the deck of a house, but it's freestanding, almost like a platform to survey a parade going by, right? Except what it was designed to do was allow people like us the opportunity to look over the wall. The wall was huge. The wall was like, what, 15, 20 feet high, something like that? Concrete wall, barbed wire, minefields on the other side of it. No buildings up close to it. And I remember going up to this, walking the stairs up to this wooden gangplank, or this wooden decking, and standing at the top and looking over the wall at Checkpoint Charlie into East Berlin. It looked like a black and white movie. Everything on the far side looked dingy and gray. The few cars that I could see looked old school, like they were so out of date. And everything on the far side looked depressing. And I remember standing there looking at that, and I turned around and looked behind me, and there were neon lights and traffic and the sounds of cars and big city and lots of life going on. And then you turn around, and like I said, you went from a color TV with vibrant HD screens to an old black and white. That's what it was like during the Cold War era. And the threat of nuclear war was always upon us, and the Soviets, basically, the Soviet Union finally came apart under its own weight in roughly, what, 1991? Well, right now, article on the New York Times. Article in the New York Times suggests just a few weeks ago that despite what's going on with U.S. and Russia trying to talk about the Ukrainian situation and all of that, that it appears that Putin is trying to turn back the clock, they say. It talks about Cold War echoes in this article in the New York Times. Unfolding in a series of meetings between Russia and different Western nations trying to arrange Europe's security. And it says, for Vladimir Putin, the issue is much broader. Whether he can roll back the clock to the mid-90s, using this particular moment in history to, in the words of a conservative historian, recreate the old Soviet sphere of influence. That's where we are right now. There are those of us who have been, you know, through the Cold War era that wonder if this is an attempt by Putin to reestablish Cold War dominance. Now, I don't believe we're going to see the Soviet Union with all these nations being usurped and brought into one. I don't believe we're going to wind up seeing him attempting to conquer territories and take land, although he may take some. But I do believe that what Putin wants to do, and I heard General Jack Keane say this the other day, Charlene pointed out to me a clip from General Keane, that what I do agree with that clip, that what he's very likely trying to do at the very least is establish power and influence in the form of proxy governments and international influence that people can't get around, like the Nord Stream 2 pipeline. Wow, and I said that. As soon as I said Nord Stream 2 pipeline, the screen on my big screen TV here changed, and lo and behold, a picture of Putin came up in the words Nord Stream 2 pipeline. That's kind of creepy. But anyway, New York Times predicting that what we're in right now is the potential for Putin to be pushing into a new look to an old school Cold War era. And that's a bit sobering. Well, in a minute, we'll get back from this break we're going to take. And I'm going to lay out for you what some of the press from, say, Wall Street Journal and other sources are saying that people in Europe are saying, or that people in Russia are saying, or for that matter, what's being said by the average citizen in the U.S. And then at 3:30, I'm kind of excited about this. I got Copper and Birdman both going to come on and just give me their perspective. Having grown up in the post-Cold War era, what do they think? What do their peers think? We'll talk about that in a few minutes. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid, conservative, just plain right. News Talk, 770 AM, 92.5 FM, WVNN, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative, just plain right. I'm in number two of the Triple Dipper, calling it Baby It's Cold Outside. And we're talking about, you know, are we in a place now where we're back into a Cold War posture with Russia? I remember distinctly the days, not just my childhood, but for that matter, my early days in the military. It was still an era where you had to polish your boots with Kiwi and stand up against the possible Russian hordes, and that's, you know, Soviet hordes. So, yeah, that's where I had my early upbringing, but not everybody is there. And so questioning right now, what do people around the world think about all this? This is what I kind of wanted to dissect today. What do people around the world think about all this potential of war with Ukraine? Keep in mind, I mean, by the way, it's not hyperbole to say something's up, all right? When you've got 130,000 conventional forces massed against the border of another sovereign nation, something's up, all right? So this is not like just, well, nothing to see here. I don't know why y'all are getting so worked up about this. Because you got 130,000 troops massed against the border, that's why. Well, so Russia's doing this on the border with Ukraine. And also, by the way, keep in mind that since 2014, Russia annexed a part of Ukraine. They annexed the Crimean Peninsula, took it as their own. The Obama-Biden administration said boo about it. Nothing. Nada. It just kind of went right on by. Russia has been in a bit of a insurgent war since then with proxy soldiers in Ukraine. 14,000 Ukrainians have died since then. This is not something that is unheard of, all right? The fighting's been ongoing. The question is the fighting going to escalate to epic new levels? Well, story in the Wall Street Journal, dated yesterday. Wall Street Journal saying Putin is saying that the West is goading Russia into a war with Ukraine. And this storyline concludes that many Russians agree with that. Well, part of that is because Putin has been using state-run media to get his side of the story out there, claiming that, well, listen, we've got problems over there. They're hurting Russian nationalists. There's things happening on that border. We're the victim here. We've got to do what is right for Mother Russia. And so he's telling that story over and over again, and after a while, people begin to believe it. It quotes a young lady, graduate student Anastasia Bukhtayeva. She says she hopes the current standoff between Russia and the West over Ukraine doesn't erupt into a full-scale war. She said, but if fighting does break out, it won't be Russia's fault. She says, I have a feeling someone's trying to provoke Russia, says Ms. Bukhtayeva. Yeah, see, that's what happens when state-run media is telling you things. But nonetheless, you look at it and wonder, how do they typically feel, though? Well, apparently an allegedly independent Russia pollster called the Levada Center found in December that two-thirds of respondents blame Ukraine, the U.S., or NATO for the escalating tensions. Only 4% blame the Kremlin. Now, I'll be honest with you. A lot of that country, in my opinion, still to this day, is a little scared of pointing out problems with the state. All right. There were the days when you could disappear and never be, if you were lucky, you went to the gulag, if you're not just disappearing and buried in concrete somewhere when the KGB would come to your house in the dark of night. But that's the citizens, generally speaking, according to the article in the Wall Street Journal, the citizens of Russia see this as outsider influence provoking a problem that they're having to respond to. That's how they see it. All right. What about younger Europeans? So, story here on a website called gmfus.com. A pretty comprehensive listing about how young European political leaders view things. I found this to be fascinating. As I read through the story, I'm looking at it going, really? They think that? And some of them say we have to be clear, we have to stand up to Russian aggression. Others are like, this is not a big deal to us. This is not our problem. But all of them, by the way, grew up in a post-Cold War era. None of them lived through the days when, so they're coming at it from a fresh new perspective. So how they see it. All right. First of all, young politicians, it says, harbor no illusions about the seriousness of the Ukraine crisis. We have to be clear, said a Green Party member of the German Bundestag. The integrity of Ukraine is threatened by acts of Russia, and Germany and the EU will have to stand on the side of Ukraine. All right. That's one member. Another one from the Spanish Congress of Deputies said, this is the West against the bad guys, the illiberal regimes. We should be on the right side of history. Okay. Another one, a member of the Bundestag in Germany said, they dismiss the idea that the United States has somehow escalated the crisis. All right, well, that's refreshing to hear because they don't all feel that way. Nevertheless, it says, here we go, next-generation leaders sometimes harbor doubts that implicitly question the Washington narrative. All right, here's one, France. Trust the French, right? I struggle to understand what Russia would gain from invading on that vast nation. My instinct tells me it's a stupid idea. Okay, all right. Says a La République en Marche in French National Assembly member. Another Green Party member of the Bundestag said, I don't see what the Russians would achieve. Okay. Yet some feel like it's trigger-happy Yankees. Okay. Some of the next generation leaders around Europe believe that it is trigger-happy. Like, here's one member of the Democratic member of the Italian Chamber of Deputies. There is distrust of the Americans. They are trigger-happy Yankees. I hear from the right wing close to Russia that you are escalating, that there are reasons for what Russia's doing. Okay. And certain members of the Polish Congress feel the same way. So it's all across the thing. Oh, here's one, by the way, here's one other French National Assembly member. Who in France even thinks about Crimea today? Most people in France could care less. Oh, well, there you go. It's a mixed bag. Bottom line is this. It's a mixed bag. So how would Americans respond? A story from a website called waronthrocks.com that specializes in looking at foreign and military policy. Foreign and military policy, waronthrocks.com, dated February 3rd, so it's, what, about a week old? 5 days old. Shows that in July of 2021, just last July, a Chicago Council on Global Affairs survey found that 50% of Americans favored the use of troops if Russia were to invade Ukraine, 48% opposed. I didn't think it'd be that high, to be honest with you. I don't favor troops going to Ukraine to fight a war. But it goes on to say this is actually an increase because in 2014, when they took Crimean Peninsula, only 30% favored the possible use of troops. I'm curious what the shift is on that. But right now, what we're seeing is there is a large sector of the United States that does not recognize this as being a big deal. I think it's a big, big deal. I don't think we ought to have boots on the ground going to war, but we better keep up every aspect of the foreign policy that leverage that we can. All right, folks, coming back in a minute with Copper and the Birdman. Talk about it some more. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid, conservative, just plain right. We'll be right back.